Hello, this is Father Gregory Matlack with a little note about Father Zechariah's second talk at our Lenten retreat. The reason I'm adding this note is basically just to let you know that I missed recording about the first 5 minutes of his talk. And he talked about various things. He was just sort of warming up. But fortunately, the main theme of his talk, which was going through the story of a certain fairy tale called The Snow Queen by Hans Christian Andersen. He hadn't really started talking about that yet, so I don't think anything really essential was missed. But when his voice picks up, he was in the middle of telling the story of someone who he talked about these desert seeds that can sit unwatered, or not necessarily unwatered, but they won't bloom for decades and decades, and then finally, all of a sudden, when the conditions are right, they'll bloom. And he was making the point that our Lord plants these kinds of seeds sometimes in our heart as we're journeying toward the Orthodox faith, things that our lives are not ready yet to bring forth or produce. But it was just this beautiful image that, you know, the Lord has plants things in our heart that sometimes take even decades to come to fruition in our lives. And so then he was telling the story of someone when he picks up here that he knew, and I honestly can't remember who, but someone that he knew that one member of this married couple, I believe, came into the Orthodox Church and very patiently prayed for 20 years, and then the spouse finally entered the church. And that's where the talk that he's giving picks up here. Okay.
It's radical. And then years and years later,
actually it was in, there we go, just in the beginning of, you know, the early 2020s, whatever, shortly after COVID, she became Orthodox 20 years later. 20 years later, went from just like Orthodoxy is the, you know, she was, you know, former Protestants. A lot of us are former Protestants, you know, Orthodoxy, whatever, you're worshiping idols, all these stuff, you know. But then somehow he was just patient. It's just, he would just pray, just go to church. And somehow that, and then just small, small turn, 20 years of change, 20 years of patience. And God works on the heart. And in our own walk, well, maybe it's not, but when we come to Christ, even in the church, we have to understand that there's those things deep in the heart that take years and years and years to start blooming and come to fruition. And God's patiently tilling and cultivating the soil of our heart so that that can happen, so that those things can come, so that when we bring forth fruit, it will be fruit that lasts for unto eternity, because that's what he's after. That's kind of preliminary stuff. And I think, I'm shifting just a little bit, because what I want to do here, because we're moving over there for the next talk. Okay. So, what I want to do, because I think this is important, and I'll tell you why. Oh, first, Father Sarah from Rose, he tells this story of a young man. I don't remember where. Do you remember? Maybe you've heard this story, Father Gregory, and you can tell me. Father Sarah from Rose told it. He was a saint, I believe, so I'm just going to say that again. I hope that Rocor, he's up there. They have a commission to, you know, look at him, but I truly believe my experience with Father Sarah from that he's amongst the choir of the saints. But he tells of this young man who goes to Mount Athos, and he meets, you know, he's going fairly new Orthodox, and he meets this hermit. And of course, you know, as you know, we're told, "Ah, give me a word. What should I read, Father? Tell me something." And he goes, "I'm trying to remember exactly what Dickens' novel it was, but he tells him to go read the Charles Dickens novel. Maybe it was David Copperfield, one of those." He goes, "Oh, read David Copperfield." And the guy's like, "What? David Copperfield? Nah, man, David, you know, Charles Dickens, you know, Western, blah, 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 you know." And he's like, "No, go read David Copperfield. Because you have to first learn how to be human. can't be human, then we'll never really be, as it were, spiritual. Because to be human is something very exceptional. And then our dearly beloved, who's actually, it's his fault, we mentioned this last night, if you weren't here, I'm mentioning it again, Father Silouan down at the monastery, Father Gregory called him, trying to get a monk who would be much better than me, up here to do a retreat. And then Father Silouan says, no, we can't do that, or something like that, right? He says, call Father Zechariah, tell him to come and do it. So that's why I'm here. Father Silouan's fault. So when I'm down there, Father, I'm going to have him. I'm gonna say, Father Silouan, I want you to call Father Gregory and tell him that he has to come to Pueblo. Okay. So do it to me. I need you to make a phone call. Call Father Gregory and tell him now he has to come to Pueblo and do a retreat for Pueblo. But anyway, Father Silouan, if you know Father Silouan, one of the things when you meet or fairly meet him, I have an uncle who went there once, for instance, and he said, yeah, he says, I meet Father Silouan. And then he asked me, he says, we're sitting there. He goes, my uncle's name is Timothy. He lives in Oregon. He goes to a Greek Orthodox church. He goes, have you ever read The Little Prince? My uncle didn't. He goes, well, you have to. So he gave him a copy of The Little Prince. So if you know Father Silouan, he loves The Little Prince, and I'm not going to steal his shtick, not in a bad way, about The Little Prince, because it's beautiful. It's beautiful. It's incredible. But what I am in that vein for this one, what I want to talk to us, because there's a lot of things around us that are very human, and that speak to us about this very important journey of the heart, and we have it echoing, we might say, in culture around us, what's left of it, that which kind of the... As Paul Kingsnorth calls the machine, is trying to destroy. I like that terminology, so I'll use it. It's not mine. It's Paul Kingsnorth, if you've read his book. But it's this very interesting. I think that's why this elder, for instance, tells this young man, go and read David Copperfield or whatever it was. I can't remember exactly which one it was. And I think it's one of the reasons why, because there's a lot of just being human. How do we interact? In the face of great oppression, it's a lot of Dickens novels. Great oppression. How do I forgive? How do I encounter life? One of my favorite Dickens novels is Nicholas Nickleby. I like Nicholas Nickleby a lot. It's a great one. And The Little Prince also, if you read it, read The Little Prince. I'll just tell you, Father Silouan will want you to read The Little Prince. Because there's something about that being, as Christ says, we have to, but in a very deep way, become like children. And so what I want to take, because it's one of the beautiful, and it's my wife's favorite, and I think it's a beautiful story that we have, and we have them all around us, especially in older literature, about a journey of the heart. So I want to speak to you from that. And it's a fairy tale, or what we would call a fairy tale. But fairy tales are very important. Why? Because fairy tales are always speaking to us about a purpose. Fairy tales are actually a very Christian reality. And our world, and its lack of Christian fairy tales, is an impoverished place. Because they give us direction, they give us hope, and they give us this idea that as a children... The reality is that we know as adults we're going to encounter evil. And we get a little maybe jaded by that. But the fairy tale is always bringing hope, right? That in the midst of our encounter with evil, whatever it is around us, we're going to encounter dragons, as C.S. Lewis tells us when he talks about fairy tales. Says, but in the encounter with those dragons, it's very important to always have hope. Always have hope. So that's my prelude, because I'm going to speak to you today from a book. It's called The Snow Queen. Have you read The Snow Queen? All right, beautiful. Because it's important. It's one of those things, and I think you're going to see as we're speaking about our encounter with Christ, and these things are shown in numerous ways. And why I'm speaking on it from here. Well, it's because I hope you'll see. There's a lot here. It's like The Little Prince, in my opinion. Hopefully I don't. I'm not going to read to you the whole book, okay? So you can go find it. If you haven't read it, I would say read The Snow Queen. But it starts out, and I'll read a few portions to you, okay? Because it starts out with a goblin, right? All those goblins. Lord of the Rings, C.S. Lewis. There's goblins out there. What's this goblin do? Some of you obviously have read it. Well, he ran a school because goblins like to teach evil, right? That's what evil does. And likes to recruit, okay? But he also makes something. It's interesting. This is important for our times. So this goblin makes a mirror, and I'll read to you. It says, this is a bad, nasty goblin, because they are. And I hope you can receive this like a child. Right? So you have to be a kid again when you hear fairy tales. It says, one day this goblin created an enormous mirror, and it had magical powers. Maybe it's like the internet. He created the internet before the internet. Anything beautiful reflected in it shrank in size to almost nothing. Everything that was worthless and ugly became large and looked even worse than ever. The most lovely landscape, when viewed through this mirror, looked like boiled spinach. The nicest people became ugly and unfriendly. Their faces changed so much that they weren't even recognizable. If a good charitable thought passed through a person's mind, thoughts, again, how important in Orthodoxy, it appeared in the mirror as an awful grimace. The demon would roar with laughter, pleased with the cleverness of his invention. Those who studied at his goblin school, right, because he ran a goblin school, were delighted, thought he was the most brilliant person ever. But then they decided, his students, because they're mischievous goblins, so they decided to take this mirror up into the world and reflect the whole world to it. But as they're flying up into the air higher and higher, I'm paraphrasing here a little bit, they suddenly dropped the mirror. When it fell to the earth, it shattered into hundreds of millions of pieces. Some of those fragments were nearly invisible, and the wind carried those specks all over the world. And each little fragment had the same power of the whole mirror. Whenever one flew into somebody's eye, it would stick there. From then on, that person would see only the bad side of life. And if that fragment stuck in somebody's heart, then his heart would eventually become a block of ice. And ultimately, what we see here is this very Christian truth. Hans Christian Andersen did see it. Is that we have this temptation, and the temptation is from the devil. And this is why people despair in our world, because we begin to look into a mirror that's reflecting the world back to us as something that is ugly and terrible. When it's not, because ultimately the world is good. It was created by God. The problem isn't, so to speak, the earth. St. Dimitri Stanloy tells us the problem is ultimately a problem of the human heart, which Christ has come to cure. And if we, again, there's a temptation even as Christians, to begin to get jaded, right? Things begin to look ugly. They begin to lose hope. And this is a demonic reality, ultimately, because the devil wants to suck hope from us, right? What are we going to do? Oh, great, let's pray. Great, there's another war. Prices are going up again, right? There's this. Yeah, because that's the mirror. That's this mirror reflecting a deformed world back to us. Reflecting a deformed world of sin and corruption, right? Of rebellion against God, ultimately. When that breaks and it gets in our eye, right? Or worse, it gets into our heart. It changes us in our interaction with the world around us, right? So this becomes a story. I can't read the whole story to you. as I've said already a few times, but with two kids. It's always about the children. The children have to go on a journey. Two named Kay and Gerda. And they would sit. They're simple children, right? They loved roses. They loved beauty. Okay? But eventually, so I can't read the whole story to you, I wanted to highlight, because it's a journey of the heart. What I hope is that we can see these simple things. What happens is they're sitting, they had a rose garden. Roses are very significant, especially in European fairy tales. Roses are significant in The Little Prince, right? He has a rose that he's tending on his planet, right? And they're beautiful, because roses, of course, think especially in the European mind, in the Slavic mind even. If you go to Ukraine, my wife's Ukrainian, they love roses. The epic flower is the rose, right? St. Seraphim, in the homilies that I translated, again, he's reflecting that Slavic, I think even European mentality, that the greatest flower is the rose, right? So the most beautiful, he says, the liturgy is the rose of God's flower garden. So roses have this deep significance, especially there. But they have a rose garden. And it's beautiful. But somehow, one time, poor little Kay, he's out there and the wind blows into his eye, one of those fragments, right? And he changes. And so he says, starts seeing things new. He goes, Gerda says, look at the roses. They're so beautiful. She's still very childlike. He goes, bah, that rose is worm-eaten. And this one has droopy petals. They're not pretty at all. And he kicks the flower boxes over. That's what orcs do, right? If you read Tolkien, Tolkien's great. I'm the one with the Middle Earth sun visor in my car, okay? So but orcs, what do? They trample everything, both in C.S. Lewis and in Tolkien, Russian fairy tales. They trample, they destroy, they have no desire for beauty. They're cutting down trees. They're terraforming the earth. What industry? Drive it, burn it all, use it for something else. We stop seeing the world as beauty around us, as the saints tell us, as really a ladder of divine ascent. They're ugly, kicks them over. And then he noticed to her dismay, when he noticed her dismay, he saw that it perturbed Gerda. He tore another rose off, right? He threw it to the ground. And this is distressing Gerda. Eventually, what happens is Kay, again, I'm skipping forward, the Snow Queen comes. It's interesting. If we look at C.S. Lewis again, if you look at Dante's Inferno, you read Dante, it's been a while since I've read it, but do you remember like the center point of hell? You remember the temperature there? Has anyone read Dante's Inferno? Okay. It's cold. It's freezing. It's not hot. It's a frigid cold. And I think C.S. Lewis was inspired by that when he wrote about his eternal winter in Narnia. Right? And we see here again, because evil doesn't just heat. We have this idea of a burning hell, but cold, nothing can survive. But same with heat. But cold just freezes you. You become lifeless. You begin to freeze on the inside. And so the Snow Queen comes because it's working its way into little Kay's heart. And he's swept away by the Snow Queen, essentially. And he takes him far away. It's always far away. Something goes far away. And Gerda, the young girl, has to go on a journey. Because there's always a journey. Right? It's never simple. It's never, there's the simple answer right there, right? You always have to go on a journey. Why is that? Because we know as humanity, there's always a journey. What does Christ say? He says, enter by the narrow gate. Because what? It's straight. Then he enters it. He says, what is the way of return? I am what? The way, the truth, and the life. No man will come to the Father but through me. So that journey of return is a journey through Christ. I am the way. And what was very early on, one of the first names for the Christian church. The way. The way. Why? Because a way is always, always a journey. And the journey in a fairy tale is never easy. Never easy. It demands something of us. First, it demands what? Love. But what is love but sacrifice? But sacrifice. Because we can say we love, and it's a frivolous word in my opinion, at least in its modern usage, but it's not really in its essential reality as a Christian. But we're always like, oh, I love coffee, which I do, right? I love coffee. I have coffee in the morning. Well, we use it just that way. I love this. I love that. Oh, I love doing this. I love hiking, you know. So we just use it. I mean, it's something I really enjoy doing. But ultimately, something to really love. Really love. Well, if we look down to Ephesians, right, chapter 5. When Christ is speaking about the community of the family. I mean, Paul does, excuse me. But he uses Christ as that image of the Christ in his church. He says, as Christ poured himself out, as Christ sacrificed himself for his church, so much, and poor husbands, right? Good gracious. So must the husband sacrifice himself for his wife. What? I didn't realize that when I got married. No one told me that. But that reality of sacrifice and love is that journey of marriage. That's what it is. You begin a journey with another person. Then you have to journey together. The world doesn't like that because the world, love is something just self-indulgent. Well, it makes me feel good, right? I love coffee, right? So coffee's cool because it makes me feel good. I love this. So it's great. It makes me feel good. And then we extend that to relationships. Oh, that person really makes me feel great. But then after they wear off, you're like, nah, I'm done. I'm looking for someone else. Because you don't have sacrifice. Which means we don't really have love. Which sacrifice entails endurance? What does Christ tell us elsewhere? He says, whoever endures to the end will be saved. But endurance isn't just like, you just got to make it. Endurance is that journey of sacrifice and love in Christ. And the world understood this. The world understood this. And then we taught it to the children in fairy tales and in numerous different ways. We don't do that much today anymore, at least in broader society, at least in my own society as America. If I'm diagnosing it a little bit. It's one of those things. We're always telling, I mean, my kids have gone through some homeschooling, some public school. But, you know, in public school, we're like, you're, you know, which is, it's not all wrong, but like, you're amazing. You're going to change the world. You're going to do all this stuff, right? It's like the world deserves to come and offer to you everything on a silver platter because you're so special. You know what? In these, it was like, no. Doesn't work like that. The world doesn't owe you anything, right? But what you are is in this world for a journey, for a way. And that is the way of sacrifice, not so that you can be satisfied by the world, but that so that we might sacrifice one for the other. One for the other. That's what the Christian community is. Ultimately, marriage is a microcosm of it, and the church is a macrocosm of that community of sacrifice within Christ and love. Excuse me. Still recovering from my voice. Was the day? No. So anyway, Gerda, back to our heroine here, Gerda. Some people say, Kay, he's dead, don't worry. And she goes on this journey. He's not dead. She believes he's not. I'm not gonna go through everything that she encounters. She encounters various things. And any journey there's full of encounter, right? Distractions. Things that might try to make us forget about our ultimate goal. Things trying to sidetrack us, right? I mean, this was just, we understood this intuitively in our world. and we reflected it to ourselves again, very importantly, in the fairy tale, in the story of our human existence, which was very Christian, which was very Christian. So she goes on. She goes on this journey, and I'm going to kind of skip through all of those things because you can read. But at the end is what is very beautiful. Because she does. She, through these very beautiful things, journeys all the way up into the northern areas, right? Frigid cold. She gets up there and she finds finally the Snow Queen's palace out of after a great journey, right? She was running. She just wanted what, and we see Gerda is willing to sacrifice everything on behalf of what? Not her own self. It's not about her. It's not about her life. She's not like, well, poor Kay, too bad he got, you know. No, she was willing to sacrifice everything. She poured out herself on behalf of her friends, right? What does the scripture also tell us, right? What greater love? What greater love than he who sacrifices himself on behalf of his friends? So some other beautiful things. Read the full story again, but I like these because these are very, in a good way, human. We have to be human. Right? We have to be human. The internet is not made. I'm on the internet, and I write. You guys have seen me on YouTube, but the internet is not making us human. It has a purpose. It's a tool. I'm not saying we can't use it. But there is something that is detaching us from our humanity. Right? And we have to use it very cautiously. It's there. Okay? We have to use it cautiously. And I'm saying as someone like, as my ugly mugs on YouTube, right? Oh, I saw your ugly face on YouTube. You know, and so it's a tool. I think there's a problem. People are coming in. I'm very glad for that. You know, doing research. But when we become Orthodox, when we come to the church, some of you have already been here, maybe others, but when we come, the important thing is that we become part of the human, the incarnate reality of Christ still in this world. That's his local church. It's right here. It's the flesh and blood right next to you. Why? Because you know what? Chances are there's going to be someone in the church that irritates you. It might even be the priest. But that's good for you. It's good for you. You need that because you need to be challenged. Without that challenge, you're not going to grow. Without that person, you're like, this person, we're like, you know. The saints tell us, you know what? That person probably doing the best for you. Doing the best for you. And it's only in the community that we're going to encounter that. You know, when you have a family, then you start having kids. You don't get to choose. It's not like you're, you know, oh, you know, what's my kids going to be like, right? My two oldest kids, you know, because I like stories, so here I am meandering again. I will get back to King Gerda. My two oldest boys, it was hilarious. My wife and I used to laugh about this all the time. My oldest boy is a night owl. Just a night owl. I mean, he would stay up. He loved to talk. My second boy, go to bed, regimen. Like, ugh. I mean, we were amazed because my oldest son, Isaiah, he would be little and he'd like be sitting on the couch. We're like, okay, Isaiah, you got to go to bed now. Let's go to bed. You know, it was like dragging him. Aiden, we'd be like, where'd Aiden go? And then we'd look and Aiden's just in bed and he's like sleeping. And the funny thing was like when we'd put them both to bed, you know, as they're getting older, Isaiah would be talking and talking and talking. And Aiden would be like, Isaiah, shut up. Shut up, Isaiah, I'm trying to sleep, you know. It was hilarious. So one of the things is Isaiah would talk. He loved to talk. At night, he would come alive. I'm like, blah, 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 blah. So my tactic, because, so I'd always go say goodnight to Isaiah first. And then I'd send my wife in, and she'd get stuck talking to him for half an hour. And then I could read. I had to hack the system a little bit. But anyway, but you see those two, they love each other, right? But they were so different. It was like, well, I have these two different, you know, they're so different in many ways, alike in a lot of ways, but very different. You know, they're both my kids. I don't know how that happened, you know. Anyway, but, you know, it was good. And they challenged each other. That's what a good brother or sister does. They challenge you. That's what the family starts doing. brothers and sisters aren't identical. They challenge each other, you know. Sometimes there's a little fighting, sometimes there's a little, but it's in that sense that they're encountering, hitting each other, rubbing each other, and hopefully helping each other grow. Ultimately, in the Christian family, to grow in Christ, to be part of that journey, right? And a good sibling, in that sense, is invaluable, right? Because then you hold on to them. You know, I'm blessed to have my older sister, who I pretty much grew up with. I'm being recorded, right? So I can't talk nice about my older sister. She might listen to it. No, I'm joking. But she's great. She always reminds me that she's the older sister. We have a running joke. And I said, yeah, that doesn't matter. I'm the firstborn son. It's like, scripturally speaking, firstborn sons. That's what's, you know. So anyway, it's our running joke with each other. But I'm very thankful for it. I mean, we butted heads. You know, there was one time, I don't even remember. I got so mad at her. I mean, I was just livid. I don't remember what it was, but I was so mad. I ran, I tackled her, and I spat in her face. So bad. And then when I did, I was like, oh, no. You know that dread when you have, like, a kid. You're like, what did I just do? And she's like, Mom! And I'm like, oh, now I'm dead. What did I do? But, you know, they test you, you know, and you have to learn those boundaries. And there's like, you know, it's great. It's really what human interaction is about. And we need that. We need that. God has orchestrated it. Why? Because, as we'll explore a little bit, hopefully in the next one, as I'm getting through this fairy tale with other things. Ultimately, God is what? A God of community. That's what makes Christianity unique. And we'll talk a little bit about this. There's nowhere else do you have a God of community. Father, Son, and Holy Spirit. But they're eternal persons. Right? And we are created in that image. They're not fallen. They don't have this kind of sometimes broken interaction where they have to, you know, they're eternal perfect beings. But nonetheless, he knows that we need this community. And so all of humanity is an interaction of community, be it from the marriage to the church. And when society is functioning properly, it should be communal in a good way and personal, right? Which is different, I would say, from individual. And that's maybe one of the problems, that we become individuals instead of persons, right? Whereas Christ is calling us to be persons, which is very different, right? Because persons are always manifested in the face of another. And that's one of those beautiful things. It's true. I don't know if you can attribute to any one person. I mean, it's like one of the reasons why you can't ever, I mean, without modern mirrors, you never see your own face, right? But you always see the face of others. And then when you're interacting, you can sense something in the response of how people are looking, how we're responding. That's the tragedy of the internet. You don't. That's why people are like, you're stupid, idiot, jerko, you know, dumbo, heretic, you know, and you don't see how the other person is being wounded on the other side, right? Because we're losing that human touch. Whereas, like, if I'm that way, like, when I spit in the face of my sister and she's like, I can tell I just did something terrible. It's that human reaction that tells me, responds, like, and I'm being instructed, even though I made the sin, it was my fault, you know, I lost my temper, I did all those things. But all of a sudden I realized through that human action, I was wrong. Oh my gosh, right? But when we lose that, when it's ripped apart and disconnected, we lose something very important. But where do we keep that alive? It's right here, right here. That's where we can, that's our, like, as it were, amazing reality in the world, because we will keep that alive in the church. And I think that's one of the greatest vocations of the church in the world right now. Because as much as we're being ripped apart in that sense, the church is going to hold everything together, because that's what God does. That's what God does. That's why St. Paul says, Don't abandon the fellowship of the local church. Don't abandon it. Stick with it. It's okay. Yeah, you're going to be challenged. That's why it's there. If it's not challenging you, there might be something wrong. We need those challenges because other people challenge us to go on journeys of the heart. Our wives, our husbands, children, other people in the church. Right? It's all those challenges. Everything is an opportunity. So here's, pick up with Gerda, right? There's the Snow Queen's castle. It's cold. It's terrible. This is beautiful. I love this. It was so cold. She could see her own breath, which poured from her mouth like smoke. She says she ran forward as fast as possible. But then a whole regiment of snowflakes. Gerda noticed that did not fall from the sky like other snowflakes, but raced along the ground, and they became ice warriors. And they were going to oppose her. The larger they grew, they were the soldiers of the Snow Queen, and Gerda trembled as they formed into a strange and terrible shapes. And few looked like ugly great porcupines, and others like knots formed with ice-fanged snakes, and others like fierce bears whose hair stood on end. But all were brilliantly white. All of them were alive, coming right at her. As she's on this final journey of the heart to the Snow Queen's castle to rescue her friend Kay. She says then, little Gerda said, it's beautiful. This is what they used to tell people. Then, so this is terrible. Oh my gosh, these are terrible creatures. Terrible things come at you in life. Very simple. Then little Gerda said her prayers. Then little Gerda said her prayers. This is what we used to just read to children. This is what do you do when these things happen? Say your prayers. Well, that's so simple. Yeah, so simple. We just want it more complicated. Don't give me something, say, give it to me complicated, right? No. It's that simple. In a good word of simplicity. And the cold was so great that she could see her own breath, which poured out of her mouth like smoke, and her breath became thicker and thicker, her prayers, and formed itself into little angels, who then grew and grew, and whenever they touched the earth, all the angels had helmets on their heads, shields in their hands, and spears. And their numbers increased as Gerda prayed. As Gerda prayed. Here's theology. Very simple. We just have to be kids again. And when she had finished her prayers, a whole legion stood around her and stuck their spears at the terrible snowflake monsters of the queen and shattered them into thousands of pieces. Then the angels stroked little Gerda's hands and feet until she was quite warm again. And she could hasten with good courage into the Snow Queen's castle. Right? There we are, in the moments when we're in those places, which will inevitably come in our lives, when we have to descend into those cold places where it feels like, where'd all the warmth go? You know, where is God in the midst of whatever sometimes very trying situations that are inevitable in this life? But we don't teach that, right? We don't teach that you're going to, as a child, but the fairy tale does. You're going to inevitably come to a place that is cold. You'll inevitably come to these times in your life. But what do you do? Pray. Don't give up. Stay courageous. So she goes into the Snow Queen's castle and she finally finds little Kay. He's almost black with cold. And he didn't even notice how cold he had become. The splinter that was working into his heart from the mirror and from the effects of the Snow Queen. Who had gone off, right, to make mischief. It's interesting. She went off purposely to kill the new crops. Very interesting, right, that were growing elsewhere. That's what evil always trying to do as we're growing those new seeds, those new crops. She'd come and blow those cold, icy things that makes us just wither again. So she finds him. So Gerda finds Kay in the midst of this castle. She says, dear little Kay, at last I found you. And again, it's a journey. But he sat so stiff, so cold, that she wept. She wept. So she's in the midst of utter coldness, of utter lifelessness. And all she does is what? She weeps. She weeps. And we see that constantly, actually, in spiritual literature. And, you know, not, you know, it's that true, those true tears of the heart. Something that's very dear, right? St. Simeon, the new theologian in the Precumesis, not one part of that drop. Not one part of that drop will you forget. That God is like collecting it. And the saints tell us that, you know, especially in those moments, those moments of the inner chamber, right? That reality that is softening our hearts. So she weeps. But those hot tears fell upon the chest of Kay. And those tears that she wept on his behalf then save him. I mean, how beautiful. So they fell on his breast and penetrated into his heart, which then thawed it because it had become like a lump of ice. Okay? Dissolving then the splinter of glass, and Kay himself bursts into tears. And he wept so that the speck of glass washed out of his eyes. And then he finally recognized Gerda, because earlier on, one of the things that happened is he began to fail to recognize Gerda, his true friend. Right? Sometimes that happens to us. But don't give up hope. Even if a friend was a friend, doesn't recognize us as a friend anymore, what can we do? Maybe we have to go on a journey of a heart, even for our friends. He wept so that the speck of glass came out, that speck of glass made by the goblin in the beginning that we talked about. He recognizes Gerda and he cries out. He says, "Gerda, Gerda, where have you been and where have I been?" Right? All of a sudden what happens is there is a return to self-knowledge in the true sense of that word. The true Christian reality of I have to know myself. Which was, of course, a philosophical axiom, right? But you can only achieve that in Christ, because how do we truly know thyself, right? Does Christ tell us? He says, if you would save your life, what must you do? Lose it, right? If you will live, what must you do? Die. Then you will find true life. And you will find true being, right? But it is only through this journey of being a Christian, which is not easy. It's not easy. It takes everything we have, as it were, with Christ. So there they are in the midst of the Snow Queen, in the midst of this cold, weeping together, right? Because their tears save them. Their tears save them. They laugh then for joy, and they weep for joy, and they escape, right? So then they journey back, and we're not going to go on that whole journey. It's delightful, right? Everything becomes bright and beautiful. But I love this ending. So Gerda and Kay went hand in hand. Spring Kay, right? Spring Kay. Always, even nature, we haven't had much of a winter, at least in Pueblo. It doesn't look like there's much of a winter out here either. But winter is a time. And if we look around, everything's teaching us. And we live in the northern hemisphere with a winter most of the time. And everything, life stops, right? But after winter is spring. We're just talking about this, right? That, you know, this is the point, because it's winter is preparing. Why is Lent at the end of winter into spring? Because spring is an icon of paradise. Everything starts blooming again, right? But a lot of times we have to go through winter to make spring, right? It's not always spring. There's a cycle and rhythm of everything around us. St. Nikolai tells us the universe is symbol and signs. Nikolai Velimirovich, he has a book on it. So they go on. Spring, it's very simple. Spring filled with flowers, right? No longer cold. There's the flowers will come, the flowers of paradise. That's our promise. We don't just go through winter for winter's sake. The whole point of death is life, resurrection. But it is the necessary path for anyone who will be truly human again. And truly a follower of Christ. Christ laid it down. We see this, right? Even in these old fairy tales. It's beautiful. Spring came, flowers, church bells are ringing. Yeah, church bells are ringing. And they recognize the high spires of their own town because they're returning, right? So they had to journey, and then they're returning back home, right? And this is really one of those things of our life. We enter out into the journey of this life. I always tell people, no one asked me. I wish someone did. No one asked me to be here. They didn't say, hey, did you like to enter into the arena of life? You know, 49, I'll be 49 very shortly, just, I guess, whatever that means. You know, sometimes I'm like, you know, I don't know. You know, if I was asked, but no one gave me a choice, here I am, you know what I mean? But, you know, it's amazing. But you do, you enter in. It's not like someone asked me to be here. Here I am by God's providence, though, right? And you enter out into the journey of life, right? And the whole journey is a journey of return back to truth and life. That's the human journey. And we knew that. It echoes in our hearts. Anyway, back to this. And there they went to their grandmother's door because it was grandmother's house. So it was always grandma. Grandmas are so important. All the grandmas in this room. Be that grandma, right? And grandpas. They went up the stairs, grandma's house, where everything remained in its usual place. As they went through the rooms, they noticed something remarkable. They had become grown-up people. There was only one way. It was that journey to really enter into the maturity of Christ, right? But you can't. You can't do it otherwise. And you'll see this. It says, the roses out on the roof were blooming. The little children's chairs stood in their old place. Kay and Gerda sat quietly side by side. The cold, empty splendor of the Snow Queen's palace seemed like something vanishing in a dream. It will be that way. It really will be. When we return to our Father's house. When we are returning already, and we know that. We've sat in our Father's house many times. Right? We've all sensed that. Well, why else would we be here? Right? It will just be in its fullness in the kingdom of heaven. The grandmother sat in the sunshine reading aloud from the Bible. Except ye become as little children, ye shall in no wise enter into the kingdom of heaven. And Kay and Gerda look at each other in their eyes. There they stood, grown up, and yet still children. Children at heart, and it was summer, a warm and delightful summer. It's a beautiful story, because ultimately the Snow Queen is the story of the heart. And it's that story that's, even though, you know, we could say, okay, Hans Christian understands he wasn't Orthodox, you know, but they still had that understanding even when Hans Christian Andersen was writing. And he was deeply influenced from that kerygma of the gospel, right, which is very important for us. And he intuited these things. Into this beautiful story. And that's why these stories, even fairy tales, are so vital for us now in our human existence, right? Because they teach us something. We can't have a sterile world. It has to be a world, even of fairy tales, a world of signs and symbols that is instructing us to something greater. Our journey of outpouring ourselves, sacrificing everything for someone in this day. Gerda did it for Kay. In the Christian sense, right? Or given, of course, for God. But for one another, right? Husbands for wives, wives for husbands. parents for children, children for siblings and for parents, right? Members of the community of Christ, one for another, right? And it is this journey together, even sometimes into the very midst of the cold of the Snow Queen's palace, right? Into the midst of Dante's Inferno, right? St. Siloan, keep your mind in hell. It's a very interesting, right? Off-quoted. And despair not. I think it means ultimately in this life, we will encounter those places of hell, right? But there's no despair. Goethe didn't despair, right? Some sense, she's imaging, some sense, very simply, that reality. What's it mean? It means Goethe in the Snow Queen's palace, right? In the midst of it, for K, for sacrifice, for love. And this, ultimately, is what makes Goethe so human. And in the end, so beautiful. We're grown up, but we're not. We're still children. Right? So may God help us on that journey of the heart. Amen. Right.
Words. Thank God. I think, given sort of the, how do I say, the narrative nature of this morning's session, I won't ask for questions right now like we did last night. So we'll just take a break for about 15, 20 minutes, get some more coffee. We're going to regather over in the nave of the church. So for those who are our guests, our tradition is we don't usually bring the food and the coffee into the nave there. So make sure you get a good drink before you head over. Then we'll regather there. For another session with Father, and then I think we'll have a good amount of time for some Q&A near the end of that. So. Oh, yeah, okay. And while we're in the nave, we're going to invite all of our children. They're going to gather in the homeschool co-op room, and they're going to be working on a craft there. So, great. Thank you.